This is Judith Leigh welcoming you to Manx Radio and to the podcast of this week's edition of At Your Service. Manx Radio. Today, I'm doing something I very rarely do. I'm going to repeat part of an interview, but there's a very good reason, and I'll explain more a little later in the programme. But first, how did you get on with the question that I asked you last week? Well, to be honest, it wasn't me asking the question. It was Reverend David Bush introducing an edition of his Keystones programme, which is all about exploring our island's churches and chapels. And David asked...
Hello and welcome to Keystones. If you walked into one of our island churchyards and read on a gravestone just inside the gate these words, I wonder if you'd know where you were. All you travellers that pass by, as you are now, so once was I, and as I am, soon you shall be. In time, prepare for eternity.
Well done if you said he was talking about Santon Parish Church, and that's where we'll be going right after our hymn, and I've chosen this one specially for everyone getting married around about now. Also, for all who are planning a wedding and everyone celebrating an anniversary over these summer months. This is Love Divine, All Loves Excelling, Joy of Heaven to Earth Come Down. Wallingford Parish Church Choir and a popular hymn for weddings, Love Divine or Love's Excelling. A little later in the programme, I'll be telling you about something new that'll be happening later this year, and I feel sure it's going to be good for all of us. But before that, let's listen to something recorded in 1986. Yes, almost 40 years ago. This is Reverend David Bush discovering all he can about Santon Parish Church in conversation with the church warden at the time, Donald Gelling.
Yes, we're down at Santon, the church that's dedicated to St. Sancton. It's a lovely position, beautiful views to sea and inland. One of the four church wardens of the parish is Don Gelling. How long is it that you've known Santon Church?
Well, I have lived in Santon all my life. In fact, I live in the same house, so I've known it all my life, which is 48 years. And I've been coming up here connected with the church for something in the region of about 15 years as a warden.
Do we know who St. Sancton was?
We believe he was of Irish origin, and he came to the island, and this is where the name came from, so it is connected with Ireland.
At some time, of course, the church used to be known as St. Anne's, which is indicated by the slate tablet on the west wall of the church.
This, I do believe, was the mistake that was made when it was rebuilt in 1774, when the plaque went up with St. Anne's, when in actual fact it should have been St. Sanctaine. So I think this is where the mistake was made, was in 1774.
Well, Santon has the distinction of containing within its churchyard probably some of the oldest bones of any Manx churchyard. I believe they're situated over in the corner near us, near the entrance, aren't they, Don?
Yes, in fact, these bones were found in 1976, just 10 years ago, by Mr. Ian Parker in a field just over behind us here. The museum took these bones, they had an inquiry, and we find that they actually date back to somewhere around the 10th century, and we did have them reinterred in the graveyard here in the corner with the actual slabs that were taken from the field where they were buried. So they make a centrepiece in the corner.
And another interesting and quite unusual grave here is that of a very long-living person.
Yes, if it is such a thing to say, we're proud to have the oldest Manxman that ever lived, who was Daniel Teare. And Daniel and his wife are buried here. And of course, Daniel was 110 years when he died. And the epitaph on his particular stone reads, "Here, friend, is little Daniel's tomb. To Joseph's age he did arrive, sloth killing thousands in their bloom, while labour kept poor Dan alive. How strange yet true, full 70 years, was his wife happy in her tears."
This must be a grave which is very often looked at by visitors coming here, quite a place for pilgrimage.
Very much so. It's not just the history of Santon, it's part of the history of the Isle of Man, and it's one that the visitors do look for and pick out. So therefore, as you can see, it's nicely alongside the path, and it is easy to get access to.
I've also been looking at a very large lumpy stone, which is not dressed or carved in any way and has no description of it at all. It's on the south side of the church. Shall we go and look at it, and you can tell us who that is?
Yes, here we are now on the south side of the church, and we're looking at the Great Stone, as it's called, and the stone covers the Cosnahan family grave, and it is 30 hundredweight, and it's a massive stone, and the Cosnahan family, I think there was something like six were vicars, four vicars of Santon, and one at Braddon and one in Peel, and they're all under this great stone. How on earth they ever got it here, I wouldn't know with the primitive machinery they'd have in those days.
Another thing that I find interesting, that although there has been a church or a keel here for probably nearly 15 centuries, the present building, I think, only dates from 1774.
Yes, something rather drastic must have happened in 1774, because in 1720 to 1730 there is the record that it was rebuilt then, and as I say, it must have been destroyed by fire, because it was then rebuilt again in 1774, which is only a short time after it was rebuilt in the first place. So I think something rather disastrous must have happened at that time.
When they rebuilt it, they obviously had the typical Manx idea of a simple building, very nicely proportioned, built in stone, of course, the local stone, and whitewashed. At the west end is a very interesting bell turret, nicely designed to lead up to the octagonal top, finishing with a large pedestal and ball. On the corner, of course, of the church, there are four pinnacles, which again are typical of some of the church buildings on our island. And there is one stained glass window, the one at the east end. You can't see much of that from the outside, so shall we go inside and have a look at it more closely? We're now standing inside the church, and we're going along to the east end to have a look at the stained glass window there.
Yes, this beautiful east window was made by Messrs. Shrigley and Hunt of Lancaster, and it actually depicts the institution of Our Lord's Supper, and actually in the window are the words, "Do this in remembrance of me," and above it, "Glory to God in the highest." And the roof and pavement of the window are very complementary to the actual church roof and pavement of the church itself.
Just at the back of the church, there are three stones. One of these is particularly unusual for a Manx church. It appears to have some inscriptions written sideways.
This is unique. It is believed to be the only Roman remains of its kind ever to be found on the island. Its origin and history are quite unknown, but it was found amongst the foundations of what once was the church or the keel here during the excavations for the rebuilding of the present church. It bears an inscription, and as I say, this is something of great interest also to the history of the island and not just to Santon Parish Church.
What we do know is some of the interesting furnishings in the church. We've got two collecting dishes which you still use on occasions, I believe.
Yes, these are of the long-handled type, so that the person taking the collection never lets the plate go. They date back to 1757 and were given to the church by Hugh Cosnahan, who was a merchant of Douglas.
Right above the crosses, where we are, is a gallery which contains an organ.
It was originally provided so that minstrels could play in the gallery, and it then was superseded by a quaint battle organ which can now still be seen in the Manx Museum in Douglas. And the present organ was built by Hewitts of Leicester and was installed towards the end of the last century.
Just in front of it is a coat of arms, one of the royal coat of arms, with a rather fierce-looking lion on the left-hand side.
Well, this is a royal living, and the coat of arms that's on the gallery are King William IV, who came to the throne in 1830. But the letters WR really do confuse us a little, because it is said that it could be the coat of arms of George III or even George II, which date back to 1801 and 1836.
The panelling on the gallery is very similar to the pews, and in turn similar to the panelling round the pulpit. The pulpit, I would guess, has come from some other church, perhaps the earlier church on the site here.
It certainly has that look about it, that it wasn't made particularly for this church.
Whatever its age, though, the pulpit must have had many different vicars treading up the steps into it. I wonder if there are any special ones that come to your mind, Don?
Well, I think one of the most amusing must have been the vicar in the 17th century, whose stipend was so small that in actual fact he kept an alehouse to augment his income. This fortunately was rectified, and the stipends have been raised, and our vicars don't have to resort to this type of thing today, fortunately. There are quite a few amusing ones where one of the vicar's wives was taken to task by the archdeacon, and the vicar is told to go to one of the tailors in town and get her completely reclothed from top to toe, and the neighbours were to keep an eye on her to make sure that she stayed that way.
Good job that times change, I think.
Yes, indeed. Care of the island's churches and the well-being of the clergy is the responsibility of an archdeacon. But thankfully, a vicar's wife dressing appropriately isn't something our archdeacon, Irene Cowell, has to worry about these days. But I hope you'll agree that these occasional extracts from the old Keystones programmes, researched and presented by Reverend David Bush, introduce us to stories that aren't simply part of the history of a particular church, but of our island too. In early spring this year, I interviewed two visitors to the island, Reverend Jeff Felton and Reverend Catherine McPhee, both ministers in the United Reformed Church. Jeff is the moderator or leader of the Mersey Synod of the United Reformed Church. The Mersey Synod is made up of 73 United Reformed Churches round the northwest of England and includes two on the Isle of Man, St Andrew's on Glencrutchery Road here in Douglas and the United Reformed Church family who share their weekly worship with the Methodist Church family in Ramsey. Reverend Catherine McPhee is based in Wavertree on Merseyside, where she has the care of two churches. And since the retirement of Reverend Dawn Maver, she's been visiting the island regularly to minister to the United Reformed Churches here. Jeff and Catherine were here in February to announce that, after well over a year of prayer and discussions, they were ready to advertise the opportunity for a United Reformed Church minister to serve the church in the Isle of Man. But, as Reverend Jeff explained, this was to be a very different appointment.
As a denomination, one of the difficulties we had was, could we place a whole minister on the island for the churches that there are? And we really questioned that. But what we did think was that there was opportunity for any new minister to work beyond the local church with the wider Christian community and wider communities generally. So part of the new role is they will be obviously associated with the local United Reformed Churches, but a significant and a much larger part of their role will be working within the community to encourage churches to work together, to reach their communities and to communicate a little bit better together as well as denominations. So part of what we've done is we've created a time, a space within the role description to be focused on that. And I think the exciting and the fresh thing about this role is that, as well as supporting the work that's already going on the island, we're hoping that this new person will be a catalyst to instigate new work on the island together, having listened to the churches and the communities and what they feel the needs are, to actually start up fresh initiatives and new mission activities as well. So I think that's one of the exciting things for me about this role.
The job has been advertised at the end of February to all URC ministers who are active in the denomination, and now it's a case of waiting for God to prompt the right person to explore that calling. It's now on the vacancy list and we just wait and see who comes forward. So it could be next month, it could be 6 months. It is a very exciting opportunity for whoever takes this role on, because there is scope for creativity, there's scope for doing things that transform communities. Then of course people have different gifts and skills, and you might not have the necessary gifts and skills in one congregation. So by pulling together people from different denominations and different churches across an area, you get the gifts and skills that you need to do the particular work that you've been called to do. But you've still got also the care of two church communities. So you've got the pastoral care of two church communities and the creative expression of new opportunities as well. Ramsay is already worshipping with the Methodist Church, so they've already taken that step further towards being an ecumenical community than where Douglas, St Andrews is in Douglas. I think it's about listening to these two different communities, recognising that they're separate and they have different needs, but exploring what is best for those communities.
We want the person that comes to listen to the communities and to the churches, to hear what the needs are and to work out the next step in what Christ is calling the United Reformed Church to be doing with the rest of the denominations across the island. So there's a lot of listening involved, listening to communities, but also listening to God and the Holy Spirit, hearing what God is calling them to.
So that was the situation in February this year. As Catherine said, the new role for a minister in the Isle of Man was offered to all United Reformed Church clergy in active ministry. And we waited. Then, when I was at the wonderful Flower Festival in St Andrews, here in Douglas, I heard that Reverend Catherine was no longer visiting the island. I assumed this was probably to do with pressure of work in her home churches on Merseyside, but I was wrong. It was for a much better reason. Catherine had stepped aside because she felt she was being called by God to apply for the role herself. And on Thursday morning, it was officially announced that Reverend Catherine McPhee will begin a new chapter in her ministry, serving as ecumenical minister on the Isle of Man from December this year. Her colleagues on Merseyside say that Catherine's 5 years of ministry there has been marked by compassion, clarity, and a deep commitment to justice and inclusion. Ordained in 2015, Catherine, a proud Scot, began her ministerial journey in the United Reformed Church in Scotland. Prior to ordination, Catherine worked within the NHS, first as a nurse and midwife, and later in administrative and IT roles. Catherine brings a rich and varied background to her ministry, along with a strong theological foundation and a heart for community and churches working together. And finally, there's a bit more of that conversation that we recorded in February that I think reveals Catherine's deep desire to see everyone reach their full potential. Reverends Jeff and Catherine are talking here about the theme which the United Reformed Church nationally has chosen to shape their ministry over the next 2 years.
For the last 2 years, our theme has been Talking Faith, and we've been encouraging our churches to learn how to be a little bit more open about their faith with one another and with friends and neighbours and family members. So that's been the last 2 years, and we've just launched our theme for the next 2 years, which is called Living Faith. So it's one thing to talk about your faith, but it's also another thing to actually live it and act it out practically. And we're going to be encouraging churches to ask themselves, how can they live out their faith effectively on their front lines, where church members find themselves on Monday morning at 9 o'clock? What does their faith mean to them in that context? It's the talking faith and the living faith coming together to make something really special. The United Reformed Church had a big report commissioned a couple of years ago, and one of the key findings of the report was that we were great at working in the community and changing the communities that we lived in, but we weren't very good at talking about why we did that. And so part of the talking faith came out of that report that was done, just to help people to articulate the love that God gives us, the forgiveness that he gives us, the grace that he gives us, and that we're called to share with other people as well.
I think what we need to learn is we just need to learn to tell our story. It's a personal journey, and it doesn't matter if it's not the same as somebody else's. It's our interaction with God and our faith, and it'll touch a point with somebody we meet. But it's just about our story, and it's not more complicated than that.
Mm.
And I think we always have this fear that we're going to get asked a question that we don't know, and that will show our faith to be weak. But actually, it's quite okay to say, I don't know the answer to that, but I can look it up, or we can talk about it a bit more. But it's okay to say, don't know. I think one of the things that we've lost in a lot of church tradition is telling our testimony, that actually hearing how somebody has come to faith, how they live their faith in difficult situations that they've experienced is very powerful. I love listening to people's testimony, and I think that's something that we've lost within the church tradition in a lot of denominations, and it would be great to see that come back, and that would help people to learn how to tell their story. If we told it within our own community to the friends that we feel safe telling it to, build our confidence to then tell it to the stranger.
And sometimes we need people in our lives who are, you know, sensitive to that kind of thing, and we'll just say, do you know, is there God at work there? Is God trying to speak to you through this?
That was my story. You know, I said to my friend, I feel like I'm being called to ordination. And she said, I've been waiting for 6 months for you to tell me that. And then I went round asking people. I thought even my non-Christian friends will say this is a bad idea. But nobody I spoke to said it was a bad idea.
No, yeah. And we're glad you did it as well, Catherine. We're glad you did it.
And we're very glad too. We pray that Reverend Catherine McPhee's ministry here will be a long and happy one. And we look forward to officially welcoming her to the island in December. And now let's finish, as we usually do, with a look at our notice board. Today, the 24th, there's another bilingual Manx and English service in Ballabeg Methodist Chapel, tonight at 6:30. This one will be contemplative in style, and the theme will be Where Heaven Meets Earth. Reverend Dr. Janet Corlett will lead it, and it'll be followed by refreshments, with, as always, a warm welcome for everyone. Tomorrow, Bank Holiday Monday, there's another Collectibles, Vintage and Antiques Fair in St Paul's Church in Ramsey. Open tomorrow from 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. Admission is just 50 pence for St Paul's Church Fabric Fund, and providing refreshments while you browse, Café San Paolo will be open in the church lounge. And now some news of Race Week refreshments. Bride Parish Church Hall is open today and tomorrow from 11 a.m. onwards, serving sandwiches, cakes and desserts, as well as homemade soup and a roll. And once again, there'll be race day refreshments in Sulby. Instead of being served at Sulby Bridge, you'll find the team waiting to serve hot and cold food and drinks just down the road at the Methodist Church at the crossroads in Sulby Village. They'll be open on race days only, and they'll start to serve about 30 minutes before the roads close. Next, we go to St Thomas's Church here in Douglas, off the promenade near the Gaiety Theatre, where the popular choir Glenfaber Chorale, conducted by Muriel Corkish, will provide an hour of music for all tastes. It's on Wednesday evening at 7:45, with free admission, delicious homemade cakes afterwards, and a retiring collection where donations would be most welcome. On Thursday evening, this week's concert in St Catherine's Church in Port Erin will be given by the beautiful Manx choir Kirjin Kujak, under the direction of Annie Kizak. It starts at 7:30 with free admission, refreshments afterwards, and a retiring collection. Then, looking forward to next Saturday, August the 30th, there's to be a welcome service at 3 o'clock next Saturday afternoon in Castletown Methodist Church for the new probationer minister, Reverend Christvin Edbarg, and his family. Reverend Christvin will be looking after 6 Methodist churches in the south of the island, and everyone's welcome to join in what I'm sure will be a very happy afternoon. And that's all that we have time for now, but I'll be back tonight at 9 o'clock with Sundown, your invitation to join me in our virtual lounge for late night listening with your requests and dedications, and I'd love you to join me again if you can. And so, until whenever we meet again, this is Judith saying thank you for listening and wishing you and those you love and all who are visiting our island at this time a safe, blessed and peaceful week. And a very good morning.
The Nation Station, Manx Radio.